Your smartphone can take amazing pictures.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Taking snapshots on a trip is probably as old as daguerreotypes. With the dominance of social media, showing off travel pics is even more of an expectation and maybe even a challenge. When you get down to it, travel photos are about capturing memories. Astrid, travel blogger, social media maven, travel picture taker, she is sure to have some tips. Astrid, you actually took a course on travel photography from National Geographic, the gold standard of adventure photography.
I must say, National Geographic and their photography expeditions and workshops are fabulous. They are, to me, definitely as good as you can get in terms of combining travel and photography skills. I mean, their trips, their expeditions, even their workshops are all fabulous. Because first of all of the instructors are professional photographers with National Geographic. And National Geographic takes photographs that are out of this world. So there, just from the get-go, this is not some amateur photographer or even a professional. This is a National Geographic travel photography or photography professional. Fabulous. They're geared to amateur photographers. They're not, these courses are not geared to professionals. Now, professionals, I'm sure, will get something out of it, but it's geared to all levels of people in terms of their photography skills. So if you don't know anything about it, they can help you get started for sure. They give you intensive instruction. You learn about photography technique. You have critique sessions. They teach you how to edit photos. You do in-field photo shoots. I mean, they have these photography courses and expeditions worked out and organized. It is just fabulous. And also, on top of all that, they're great fun, and you meet a lot of like-minded people, and there's really good camaraderie. So to whet your appetite just a little bit about what some of the types or some of the trips that National Geographic offers, I'll give you just some quickly. First of all, can you imagine yourself in Morocco? They have a Morocco photography tour, 10 days. Another one is Tanzania Photo Safari. That one I'm interested in taking, 9 days. Mongolia Photography Expedition, 12 days. That should be great because Mongolia, you know, is just in the middle of nowhere, but it has a lot of unique aspects to their culture and how it relates to the landscape or, you know, the geography where they are. And I'm sure that one is just fantastic. India by rail expedition. So you not only get to see India, but you see India on a 5-star, beautifully renovated train. And then you also are having photography courses and taking photographs. Cool. Cuba and its people. That one is becoming very popular. That one's 8 days. And then another one is the New York City Smartphone Photography Workshop is the one that I took. And I want to go through my evolution as a photographer or someone that takes photographs and posts them on social media, my blogs, website, everything, and really how pathetic I was and how completely just I had such an inferiority complex. And I can credit National Geographic and just a 2-day workshop completely changed my life in this way. But you know, I had wanted to take I'd say 2 years, one of their courses, because I knew how important high-quality photographs were. I mean, I would look at other bloggers' photographs on Instagram, Twitter, and of course Facebook, but I would look at the quality and how they would capture emotion or the colors. And, you know, I kept saying, why can't I do that? I mean, I kept trying, and it was just, I just felt so insecure about everything. And my husband, who's an architect, any picture that he takes looks fabulous. Now, I always say there's something about how his eyes are. He can see birds and trees from way off. I mean, he just sees. But he takes fabulous pictures just easy. And I could never take any. So I was a total novice when I started this venture, and I really had to just decide that I have to get over this. I have to dive in, and I have to figure out how to get my photographs on a high enough level to where I can be effective, okay? So I went and bought myself a new camera, expensive camera. I even got a GoPro, a drone, and then my iPhone. I mean, I decided I'm going to get the equipment, first of all. Then young kids who work for IBM, who are all great photo takers, who developed my first blog, they gave me some basic photography lessons on both the camera and the iPhone. Well, that helped me get started. But I have to say, my first year, 85% of my photographs were awful. They were still awful. I mean, I might have captured something really well, but there's a pole right in the middle of it. Or there's somebody sticking their hand somewhere that I can't crop. I mean, it was like I said, 85% of my pictures, there was something wrong with them. And if you are doing what I do and traveling and taking photographs and using them for material for your blog or website or whatever, you have to have a better ratio than 85%. So, you know, I was just so frustrated. So I just decided I couldn't go on one of these longer National Geographic trips. But I just last year I said, I have got to take one of their workshops at least to really get on a higher level. And I found myself taking more and more photographs with my iPhone. My iPhone, I could take better photographs. And I kept saying, this expensive camera, I mean, I know I'm not doing right with exposure and some of the focusing and everything, but I would put it on automatic or turn the little dial to, you know, nature or what. I mean, I was trying everything, but it was my smartphone, I was getting higher quality photographs. So I decided I'm going to New York City. I'm going to do this workshop. It really did. It changed my life in terms of photography and taking quality photographs. So I must say, I do plan to take one or two more of their courses with my expensive camera, because I would like to.
Let's get some use out of it, yeah.
Yeah, my GoPro and my drone, but I have to, you know, take baby steps. But I've made a lot of progress.
Listeners, when you see some drone footage of us podcasting, that would be pretty fun.
Well, I mean, I know how to get the drone off the ground. It's just keeping it in the air and the photographs and everything. I'm worried I'm going to run into somebody. It's going to go haywire.
Yeah, no kidding. I know you always have tips, and that's what listeners are here for. But before we get to that, could you speak a little bit about something about the challenge of photos, or maybe we can call it the pressure of taking photos, especially in our social media age? How do you suggest that solo travelers get the snaps that they want, but that they don't get so carried away that they are taken out of the moment, they're taken out of the experience of their travel?
How not to get carried away with taking photos, that it's disruptive to your travel experience, could be somewhat of a problem, and especially when you're traveling with someone else or with a group. And I can tell you, my daughter, when I travel with her, she is so aggravated when I'm just taking photographs, and especially when I first started out. You just take pictures of everything. You're just shooting. You don't know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. But it was so off-putting to my daughter because we were stopping the flow of our conversation or where we were going or whatever with this incessant picture taking that I was doing.
Well, that's like the stereotype of somebody taking so many pictures. It's like, how are you even enjoying this trip?
Exactly. Well, you know, maybe you should go solo with your if you plan to take a lot of photographs, which I highly recommend, but it can be a distraction. So, you know, and like if you are traveling solo and taking a lot of, or you plan to take a lot of photographs, you have to plan for that. You just allocate more time to take those photographs. And, you know, like, even to the point where if you want to take some, say, photographs of St. Mark's Square, don't just go into the square and take one from this angle or from this viewpoint or from up above or whatever. Sit in one of the cafes and, like, sit there for an hour or more and observe. And then start framing in your mind what angles or what part of the architecture you want, or do you want to focus on the pigeons or whatever it is. But if you sit and observe and kind of try to plan what you're wanting to capture, it's much better than just walking around the square and shooting all kinds of pictures. So that takes more time. So you have to kind of, you know, plan for it. Then sometimes, I mean, you just have to let a shot go. Like, say if you want to get, you know, some landmark and everything just works against you. You can't get close enough to it or, you know, something prevents you from really getting ready to shoot it or whatever takes you away from it. You just got to let it go. Now, I say that, but I am such a dogged photo taker now, and the gentleman Ed Cashy, who's just such a famous photographer with National Geographic, told us all in the class, look, when you start taking photographs, it is so hard not to quit taking photographs. It's like you just become obsessed with it. And it is a little bit that way. And I can say, I remember on my last trip to San Francisco about 6 weeks ago, I was down at the wharf and I wanted to before I got there, I wanted to take a nice photograph of Coit Tower because it's a very distinctive landmark, and it was kind of getting towards dusk. And so I never could get close enough or get a good angle to get the photograph from where I was standing. So I finally had to get in the cab and go back to the hotel because I had something I had to be, a function I had to be at 7 o'clock. And so I thought the cab was racing along the waterfront, and the side streets that were coming in, I looked, the first one, I could see Coit Tower. So I got my smartphone out, and every time we went past the side street, I would try to get Coit Tower. And I must have taken 25 photographs, and I got one spectacular one. Now, let me tell you, I could have let it go. But I didn't, and I kept on, and I did get one. But and I share that with you because that's how difficult this is. So, you know, you have to know that it's going to take you some time. You have to plan for it, and try not to put too much pressure on yourself. But stay at it. You know, just stay at it, and you know you'll probably get enough. Taking photos that you love and basically that you're proud of is a challenge. I must say, the pressure of getting that it shot is very real. If you're serious about taking quality photographs, and in the the teachers that I had in the workshop with National Geographic, they'll all say the same thing. Now, you know, they've been doing it a long time. They know all the skills, techniques, and they've proven award-winning photographers. But it is a challenge, and it always remains a challenge. Sometimes, you know, they say they'll go days and days without getting some really it photographs. So the challenge is always there. But before I get into some real specific tips, I'll just share some broad suggestions that I have experienced that kind of, I guess before you get into the real technical tips, you kind of have to get this down or in your mind and start doing this. The first one is just relax. Relax about this. I know when I was trying to take pictures, I was trying so hard to get this lined up just right and all this kind of stuff. You know, just relax about it. Try to see what you're doing and get it like you want to. And just relax. I tell you, just by being relaxed, you're not going to mess up as many pictures. It's just funny how that works. So when you start out, just be loose. Relax. Second thing is, make a list of kind of what your subject matter, what you want to photograph that day. Do you want to focus on nature? Do you want to focus on portraiture? Are you going to take shots mostly of architecture or, you know, people interacting with each other? Make a list of what you think you want to shoot that day before you go shoot. Now, that doesn't mean you'll end up shooting that much. You'll get carried away, and in the moment, this is much better. But you need to kind of focus yourself in how and think about how you want to do this. I mean, do you want to take only silhouette shots of people this day or something that you want to specifically shoot that day? You should do that before you even start out, okay? Then once you start out, then just observe. And I know this sounds logical, and of course you're going to observe when you take pictures. But when I say observe everything, like, you know, whether the soles of somebody's shoes are clean or not, or if somebody didn't close their purse all the way. I mean, I'm telling you, you need to really look for that bird in the tree way far away that my husband can see all the time. You have to develop your ability to observe. And the more you do it in a way that is, you're focusing on it, you will observe more. So observe. Think that way. And then anything that catches your eye, whether you think it's weird or kind of off-putting or comical or whatever, anything that just pops out to you, take pictures of it. Take pictures of it at different angles. Just try to capture in the picture what drew you or stimulated your emotion to take that photograph. Just go with that flow. You might not be successful at first, but the more you do that, the more you will end up capturing what I say really great photographs, or that it photograph. Okay? If you're shooting people, portraiture, always ask somebody if you can take their picture, because I even myself have taken some pictures and I have gotten some really what I call some bad stares back, and I realized at that time that I was being rude and I didn't think about it. So remember that, you know, when you're out, if you see something, whatever, and if it's somebody, just say, do you mind if I take your picture? Or, I'm doing this and I need to have somebody in the picture to give it some scale. Would you mind? That'll go a long way. You'll get a much better picture of them if you ask them. And then, of course, if they don't want to, then don't take the picture. Another thing is I have what's called a bandolier phone case. And this is an appliance that it's actually a cover for the back of the phone, but the front of the phone is exposed. And it's on a little strap that I can use. It's crossbody. So I wear this phone with this bandolier attachment whenever I am out shooting photos, because that camera is right there, always ready. And I can tell you, if you have it in something where you have to pull it out, just that extra little step, you could miss what you're seeing. I mean, the bird could fly off or whatever. So I really suggest you looking at some kind of accessory like this. I like the bandolier, and I've had a lot of success with it, but it is great because, you're ready to take a photograph at any time with that. Last, just basic, shoot, shoot, shoot. Just take lots of pictures because you can always delete them. And you'll be surprised. You might shoot 1 out of 10. And that one is almost perfect, and all you have to do is crop one little thing or maybe adjust the exposure just a little bit. But the other 9, you can't make that it shot. So shoot, 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 and the garbage ones, just delete them.
Okay, so let's get into it. What tips do you have for travel photography?
Okay, well, I am going to defer to basically the tips that I got from my National Geographic smartphone photography workshop. I think they're great. Ed Cashy, who was our instructor, is an award-winning photojournalist and filmmaker. He was just great. I mean, he was such a well-traveled, just relaxed and brilliant man, and especially with photography. So he was a really wonderful instructor with the other 2 National Geographic photographers. They were great. So I'm going to use or share with you their tips, because I think they're fabulous. And a little bit about that course. First of all, it was 2 days. We first met and we had an overview by Mr. Cashy and the others, and basically shared the structure of the class, that we would have 3 different field trips where we were given photo assignments, whether it was portraiture or, architecture or just street scenes, different lighting, trying to capture low light or high light, etc. Our particular stops were the High Line, which was very interesting. This is that pedestrian walkway where there are a lot of different activities that go along, and it's just a very in place to go to. So
people watching heavy.
Oh yeah. But it was difficult to shoot photographs there because there were so many people. See, this is the thing, when there are a lot of people, to capture one focal point or to capture something that is worth taking a picture, that your eyes don't get all, you can't get anything out of the photograph because there are too many things in it that are disturbing. It's hard to take. I'll never forget one of the classmates. She was a great picture photographer, and she took a picture of the inside of a hot dog stand that I thought was the most fabulous photograph of that High Line, and it was amazing. She had the gentleman inside who was making a hot dog, and she kind of caught him at just the right angle doing it, and kind of giving it to the and just the whole thing. I mean, I don't like hot dogs, but it made me want to eat one. and so, we had that field trip. We had to go to Times Square. Oh my God, Times Square. at dusk and then turning to night, that was really hard with all those people and low light and high light. We had to do things with reflection. We had to get portraiture. Oh, that was difficult too. And then the last one, we went to the 9/11 area with the Oculus and the 9/11 Memorial and just everything around there, which is, you know, the One World Trade Center. It's just such fertile ground for some just beautiful and very emotive photo-taking there. Those were the three places. You know, instead of the Oculus and the 9/11 area, they... The workshop usually goes to Central Park, but for some reason they wanted to do that, which turned out great, I think. But after every field trip, we would have to come back and critique. And we have to take our five best pictures, put them on a big screen, the whole class critiques, and the teachers critique. And let me tell you, like I said at the beginning of the show, I had no confidence in my photography skills, and I felt like, oh God, I just felt so dumb compared to the other classmates. But I just mustered up my desire and my courage, and I kept doing it. And each time we would come back after, you know, being out in the field, I knew I was doing better per se, but it was quite a challenge. So we had the critique and the editing session. Then we had a lot of instruction on basically the techniques and the tips, which I'm going to get ready to give to you. So that was great. And they ended up making a nice video with all of our photographs for us to keep. And we had a great, nice farewell dinner at Sarah Beth's, which is a very cool restaurant in New York. So it was just a wonderful experience. And really, it was very substantive. And I highly recommend it. So that's a little bit about the particular course and how it's structured. And these are some of the tips and the techniques that they gave us. First of all, always have your smartphone ready. You know, just be ready to shoot the shot. Ed Cashie walks around with his phone out. And even when he's talking to other people or whatever, he's shooting shots. He's so good that he kind of knows what he needs to do. And then, of course, he crops and everything and edits them. But, I mean, he not only is always ready to shoot, he's shooting too if he's doing something else, but his eye is so good. But always be ready to shoot. And like I said, I use the Bandolier little crossbody phone case that doesn't have a front over the phone itself. So I'm always ready to shoot. So I really, that's number one. Then number two, composition. Now when you're looking at something that you want to take a photograph of, you have to kind of think about the rule of thirds, basically, the tic-tac-toe rule. Because in your camera, there is basically like a tic-tac-toe board that is behind the picture where you'll have horizontal lines and vertical lines, so you'll have like nine squares, just like tic-tac-toe. Well, you want to get the subject of what you're taking, the focal point, at one of the intersections, the four intersections on that. Don't take it straight on. The best photographs are a little off-center because they need some kind of line in it or something just aesthetically. And all smartphones and good cameras, all you have to do is hit it a little bit. You'll see where it is. So, you know, I never knew that existed. You know, so that was great. That was like a eureka moment for me. The next thing is the zooming. Now, I didn't even know what zooming was on the camera until last year when I went around the world. And in Lisbon, I saw this one gentleman. I was trying to take a sunset, and he was doing it. I said, "What are you doing? You can zoom on the iPhone?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." So he showed me. So I zoomed. Well, I learned at this class, don't zoom. Take the photograph and zoom afterwards and then crop. Your photographs will be, the resolution is much better than you zoom and take the photograph after you've zoomed.
Do you see my stunned face? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what they said. So, and then fourth is the point of view. Now, this is the angle which you want to take your subject. And Ed said, you know, experiment with interesting angles. Lie down, you know, look up at your subject, or shoot it from above, or diagonally, or from behind. You know, just think about different angles in which to capture a more powerful expression or statement of what you're taking a picture of. So that, you know, that just takes experiments. It takes practice of seeing that way. Now, the phones are so good now that in the cropping section, you can change the angle yourself. Now, you can't change it from above or below, but you can cock it to one side and crop it and do different things. But point of view. So think about, you know, would it be better if I shot this little kid from looking up at him when he's eating a popsicle rather than down on him? You know, there are a lot of different things. And, you know, I'm not that good at it yet to really see it. You need to be aware, loosen up on just taking straight at something, okay? Use two hands for stability. Now, this is common sense. You know, hold a phone in your left hand, you know, hit the button with your right. Now, if you're left-handed, it's opposite.
Swap it, yeah.
But basically, you got to be steady. It's important that, you know, you're steady when you take the photograph. And sometimes I'll even hold my breath to make sure I'm really steady. Now, you know, I have a tripod and all that, but I've yet to really use it. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the show, I bought everything. I mean, I've got the equipment. So, okay, next is for high-speed action shots like sports or wildlife moving, use an expensive camera because you can't get those shots in still life. On the iPhone. That's what the teacher says. You'll get them, but it's not going to be really good quality. So if you want to shoot something like that, do it in video off the phone. Don't try to capture just one shot as like a lion in motion or something. It'll be very hard to get it because those good phones, they can take so many pictures real quick, and they can, the exposure and the focusing and everything is just... That was tip number six. Okay, number seven is keep the composition simple. Now, you want to have a focal point or some focus of every particular photograph, whether it's somebody's foot or, you know, somebody's hand or a bird or whatever is what you want to capture that will speak to whoever is looking at the photograph. Because one of the things they kept saying in this course is you always want to take photographs that will draw the looker in to look at the photograph and will create some kind of emotion and hopefully some kind of really a bond or something about the photograph that gets to their real, it talks to them, it speaks to them. And, you know, Ed kept saying, you know, some of the most simple things that people do, like drinking a glass of water, if you can get it at the right angle with the right light and them kind of looking up, maybe they're thinking before they, you know, get ready to finish their meal. It's all those things put together. So when you're looking at your composition, think like that. What's going to be the focal point and kind of what do I want to share about this with whoever is going to look at the photographs? And the more you do that, the more you're able to do that with some skill. Okay, and then also, you know, they said look for patterns, like repetition patterns. Say there are the little reflectors, street reflectors in the middle of the road. Well, kind of take your photograph to where the eye would go down it, and it some middle point is what you're trying to shoot. So look for lines in buildings or repetition of patterns, whether it's windows or something that repeats, something that takes your eye to the line, and it kind of gets you to exactly where you the focal point of your photo. So keep your composition simple, but look at what is actually going on in that second when you're taking a photograph. I mean, I know a lot of times I'm trying to take photographs inside like a restaurant or something because I'm going to blog about it. I mean, I have to take sometimes 15, 20 pictures because, you know, somebody will get up, the waiter will go, you know. I mean, it's just so hard to, but, you know I want to get this particular angle, everybody happy in the picture, and, you know, those kinds of things. It takes a while to do, but keep your composition simple. Next one is light is the key. Oh, God. This one is hard because I don't think I see that well to begin with. But, you know, light is so important. You can take a shot 100 times, and if the light's bad, all 100 pictures are going to be bad. But if the light is really good, that particular shot, that will be absolutely out of this world if the light is good. Couple of little tips about light. If you are taking like portraits or pictures of people, don't avoid the direct sun in their face. Anything that's directly, the sun is too much onto people, you get all kinds of weird looking, first of all, they have to squint. But, you know, even if they're not squinting, it's something, it's too harsh. It takes the quality out of what's in the photograph some kind of way. And then, you know, they said that bright overcast, or look for those kind of days, which means it's sunny, but they're clouds. That's usually the quality of the light is very good. They also like, they kept saying slight fogs are real good. When it's just a little foggy, just that little essence of the fog, something about it really can create some really photographs that you remember. Another tip dealing with light, there is what's called the magic hour. And the magic hour is right at dawn for about an hour. And then the other hour is right at dusk for an hour. And this is when the natural light all over the world, which is different, you know, obviously different time zones, it's the sun is a different place and different angle, but at this magic hour is when the light is the most intense and the photographs are wonderful. And professional photographers get up really early to take great photographs. You know, they get up before the sun comes up, they go sit, and they stage what they want to do, and they take it during the magic hour, as well as the same thing in the evening when it's dusk till the sun goes down. This, I mean, I must say, that is the truth, because I have done it when it's in the magic hour and when it's not. This photographing the same area and the quality of the photographs are completely different. And what's so good now is you have apps that tell you exactly when it is the magic hour and when it will be. And they even have little things that, you know, pop up and remind you.
Hey, like, take your pictures now.
Yeah, or in 10 minutes, the magic hour will start. But it's wondrous or something. So, you know, read a little bit up about the magic hour and why it's so good, et cetera, and take some photographs during that time. Number 10, Be on the lookout for good reflection. Now, this is something I never thought about before I took the course. Things that reflect, like, you know, we've all taken photographs not on purpose for the reflection, but it's there. Like, say, if you're taking a photograph of a lake and you're really trying to, say, take some people boating on one side. Well, on maybe some of the photograph, you get a wonderful reflection of the water and, you know, basically the landscape, and you have the inverse of the landscape. Now, when you really start taking photographs and you try to take good ones, you're always looking for hints of reflection and how to take photographs that have reflection in it. Some of those can be the most outstanding and interesting photographs. So they said look for look at water puddles, windows, especially skyscrapers, you know, with a lot of glass, mirrors. Anything that's a shiny object. Well, I started taking what I call reverse selfies, which was if I would see something that was reflecting, just like if you go in the bathroom, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, I know this sounds goofy, but I was trying to use some of it, and it's amazing. There's something about the reflection, too, that gives a... There's something about the quality of light or something. So that's another one. Look for good reflections. Next one is look for people or objects to create sense of scale, especially if something big and expansive. You'll see gorgeous photographs of the desert and dunes. Well, it's much more interesting if you have two or three people on the left-hand side at that intersection on tic-tac-toe on Campbell's. You just see it better than just this great expanse. I mean, you'll if the picture's well taken and the light's right, et cetera, it'll be nice. But with the camels and the people on it, it will ground you more. It's just one of the things that they shared is when you take photographs, you need to have some kind of object or person to create a sense of scale, especially if it's a lot bigger than you or a lot smaller than you. Something that you know, brings the photograph into a realistic kind of scene.
Perspective. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, next one, very common sense, keep your phone dry and clean. I mean, you know, you got to protect it from water because you get too much, forget it, and dust mess up your pictures. So keep it, protect it from water and dust. And they, you know, there are all kinds of little films now that you can put over your smartphone that you definitely need to do that because you're going to drop it and, you know, it's going to get dirty and water will get on it. So you need to get one of those. Next one is when shooting portraits, look for soft indirect light. Now, if you want to shoot somebody's face or you want to shoot just a person like sitting down, maybe eating a cone with gelato or just something, you want to look. You don't want, well, like I said, you don't want the sun to be directly in their face. They shared it's better to have some kind of indirect light. Like they said, they showed some pictures that light coming through a window and hitting the person, say, at their shoulder, where you could see it on their face but wasn't directly on the face, and the face had a certain angle, etc. So you want kind of indirect light on the subject matter. Straight light, as I shared, is a complete no-no. Also, take a lot of photographs from the different angles if you want to do portraiture. Talk to them. Sing. Have music. You know, that's, you can capture some good portraiture if you do those things. Okay? Then number 14 is look for abstract shots and humor. I mean, they were all at that. Look for all the weird things. I mean, that was one thing I got. You know, think outside the box when you're taking photographs. I mean, just look for it's things that you would never think were good to take. Just keep observing. You know, whether it's graffiti, street art. I mean, lots of people take photographs of that now because it's so popular. But, you know, I remember when I was growing up, they had candid camera, which was, you know, filming people doing crazy things or in bad situations. Well, you don't want to take something that's hurtful to somebody or embarrassing. But look for shots that, you know, somebody is just a look of amazement or they're just, you know, look for these different kind of expressions or situations that, of course, are not that off-putting unless you're documenting, you know, poverty in some place or something like that. But, you know, look for abstract shots or shots that are just funny. You know, people can do some funny things, like wear some really, you know, funny clothes. I remember I saw this one guy, and I took a picture of him. I didn't ask him if I could, but I just walked past him. He was in the New Orleans airport. He was reading something, and he didn't look like he was kind of off. He looked like a lawyer, to tell you the truth. He had a little small hat on, so you could really see his face, but he had a clown nose on him. Oh. And I thought, what is he doing? It's not Mardi Gras. You know, but obviously he was doing that. He was either going somewhere where he had to have it, or it was symbolized something, or he was just wanting to be weird and funny. But he wasn't weird looking. That's what I'm trying to say. So I thought, I didn't get a good picture of it. But, you know, to see somebody who's, say, like reading, you know, a novel or something that looks like a distinguished person with a red clown nose on their nose, that was really, I went, whoa, what's going on here? Then last is use your smartphone editing capabilities. And let me tell you something. The capabilities now are so fabulous. That was one of the biggest things I learned from that class. You can take so many garbage photographs and really crop them and change the exposure and the contrast and the shadows and filters and structure. You can do so much that it has revived, I know, maybe 40% of the 85% that I took. I mean, I'm getting ready to post a photograph tonight on my social media of a Russian samovar, and this is a big kind of tall, unique tea kettle that they brew boiling water and then the tea on top of it, real strong tea. And it's very symbolic in the Russian culture. It's, first of all, a symbol of hospitality. And, you know, the Russians love to drink tea and talk and kind of, you know, get it together and go back out and do whatever they need to do. Well, I took some photographs of a very pretty samovar in a hotel restaurant, and they had a nice spread with the little Russian dolls and then the, you know, the toast and everything else for breakfast. Well, I thought when I took the photograph that it was good. Well, when I saw the few that I took, oh, I thought, there's just too much going on. The stage is in the back because it was in this real fancy restaurant that they have a live performance in the evening. And but when I was going through my photographs to post something on Russia, I saw it and I said, let me see if I can edit this and focus this and bring it just to right on the samovar with one of the dolls and then do the light just right. I think I have a knocked out photograph that I'm going to share tonight on my social media. But that's strictly because I was able to use the cropping, enhancing the color, highlighting, exposure, sharpen the contrast. I mean, these filters and things that this iPhone can do is just absolutely out of this world. I mean, and I can't wait till the iPhone 8 comes out. They're supposed to, the cameras and everything is supposed to be even better. Oh, yeah. So those are the 15 basic tips that National Geographic, you know, kept talking to us and kept, when they were editing our photos, they would say, well, you should have, what about this angle? Or, you know, that was too much direct sunlight and blah, 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 all that. So I'll just kind of close this particular podcast with, if I can learn how to take quality photographs, anyone can. And I really do highly recommend National Geographic, their photography expeditions or the workshops, because, you know, they will get you focused in the right direction. You'll definitely learn the basic photography techniques, and you'll end up beginning to shoot photos that you're really proud of. And you'll know, you'll have confidence. You might not get it, but you know what's a good photograph.
If anybody who's listening to this is not following Astrid on social media, you are missing out, because there's some great photos you're posting all the time. Astrid's on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But you know what is the perfect picture of stress-free travel planning? A helpful and comprehensive packing list. Astrid has one. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. And in fact, it will also be with this show on the podcast section of her website, astridtravel.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and we're making a special call. If you like what you're hearing, if you're enjoying the show and you want other people to know about Solo Travel Talk, please give us a rating on any of those platforms. I maybe some people can send you some of the pictures they're taking on their solo adventures. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be happy to post them. And maybe even if they want me to respond, you know, do what do you think I should have done? Or what do you, you know? I mean, I must say, I have increased my confidence so much at knowing what a good photograph is, that I could probably share some you know, suggestions.
More specific tips. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And I want to share at the very end, and this, I don't want to sound that I'm bragging or anything, but National Geographic did post 5 of the photos
I love
that
it.
I took, and they're still on their website.
Woo-hoo!
As, you know, just some of the participants' photos that they did. So I learned a lot, and it's they're just National Geographic. They're just the best at everything they do.
Well, that's what I started with, the gold standard. They really are. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.